Session number 8397.
Mr. Sparks, reel 3.
We climbed aboard this lorry amongst the toilet seats and tried to make ourselves, I suppose, look like a toilet seat, covered with straw. And then eventually we started our way towards Barcelona. We were stopped at one checkpoint, which they expected. They shone the torch in, but thankfully they wasn't too interested. And then we continued to Barcelona. We got into Barcelona and they put us in a dingy little hotel for the night. The next morning, they roused us, called us down, and there was a great big car with a big Union Jack flying on the front. Finest sight I've ever seen in my life. And we got in the car, and of course then we were comparatively safe. We were more or less on British territory. And they took us to the British Embassy.
This was a diplomatic car, was it?
That's right, yeah. I suppose we stayed with the vice consul there for about nearly 2 weeks. And then the time came, they had to move us down to Madrid. He took us down by car. I think we travelled all day in his car. And we eventually got to Madrid, the embassy at Madrid. And there they decided that because Major Hazler looked very much older, they could pass him off as being outside military age. And he could move about in Madrid freely. And they eventually flew him home from Madrid. Well, I was left in the embassy, met up with a couple of RAF chaps that had been shot down and made their escape. And then eventually they came along and they said, you're moving for Gibraltar tomorrow. The next day we'd got clearance, got on the train and locked away in a carriage and eventually got to the linear. Got out of the linear and got to the border. Well, now, once he stepped across the border, of course, I had no means of identification, I was immediately arrested. And this is very ironical, where we'd spent nearly 6 months in France amongst the Germans and the French police and always evaded capture. And I stepped across the line into British territory and was arrested. Well, they took me away for interrogation. Still under arrest, I was marched down to a depot ship. Still under arrest, and was eventually put on a troop ship that sailed for Liverpool. Once on the troop ship, of course, I was isolated and put in a little cabin. When we got to Liverpool, I was kept aboard till someone from MI5 came, where I was interrogated again. And then, still under arrest, I was taken down to the dockyard gates, handed over to the military police, and I was told that I was to go to Euston and report to the hotel at Euston for further interrogation. Well, this was the only time when they left me free. They put me on the train, waited for the train to pull out, and there away I went. Well, now, whilst in Gibraltar, I'd learned that my parents received a telegram, missing, presumed, killed. So we got into Euston about 5 o'clock in the morning, and I decided that I would go home to let them know that I was still alive, which I did. I went home, but unfortunately I took about 4 days to tell them. And when I got back to the hotel at Euston, reported, surprise, surprise, I was arrested.
And, how do you mean you took them 4 days to tell them?
Well, instead of going, I should have gone straight to the hotel, but I went home first to let them know that I was alive. And instead of coming straight back to the hotel, I decided I'd spend a few days with them. And naturally, when I got to the hotel, they was expecting me 4 days prior. And say, surprise, surprise, I was immediately arrested. Taken up to another office for interrogation, and this time by somebody from Combined Ops, who thankfully seemed to be expecting me. And after answering his questions, he let me out of the side door with a promise that I was to go round to Combined Ops HQ and report immediately, which I did, and then from then my troubles finished.
How had they treated you in Gibraltar when you were under arrest?
I suppose they were half and half. The escort were very good. They were convinced I was English, but I think MI5 and people like that, they were very, very cautious. I had no means of identification. They obviously had known that we were coming across, but the Germans did used to do this. They used to send people across in someone's place and so forth. There was a hell of a lot of this went on. So I suppose, quite rightfully, I was treated very suspiciously.
Did you rejoin RMBPD?
Oh, yes. When I came back to, I had a couple of weeks leave, came back to Portsmouth, and of course, number one section was still missing. Number two section had formed, and I joined up with them. Well, we trained for quite a while with them, and then they were, Major Hasler had then been made a colonel and gone to the Far East, and the unit was supposed to go out to join him. Well, now, because I'd been in enemy-occupied territory, they couldn't draft me for at least 6 months, which meant I would be left behind with another new unit, possibly to train, unless I volunteered, which naturally I did, I volunteered. And next we knew, we were on the ship going out to what we thought were the Far East. We got to the Middle East, and they asked us to stop off and do a job for them, with a couple of ships in Alexandria Harbour that were rather on the verge of mutiny, foreign ships obviously, and if they tried to sail, we were to sink them. But thankfully it got all blew over, and peace reigned. And then we joined up with raiding forces, which were the SAS and the Long Range Desert Group that joined forces and made raiding forces. They asked us to do a job for them in the Aegean. There were a couple of destroyers up there that were proving a bit of a nuisance. We went up to the Aegean and sunk them. And then for some reason or other, we stayed up there for a further 12 months doing various raids. It was a wonderful time up there. Then when the Aegean practically packed up, we hoped that we were going back or going out to the Far East, but they decided they would bring us back to England for retraining, re-equipping, and by the time we came back, of course, the atom bomb had dropped, and it was all over.
What nationality were the ships in Alexandria?
Greek.
Were you told very much about why they'd mutinied?
No, they decided they weren't going to do this. They were on the verge of mutiny. They were going, we believed, to take the ships out, and we were told that they weren't to go.
What preparations did you make to attack the ships?
Limpet mines. We would have got into the water just the same, but this time, of course, we would have probably used the frogman suit, swum over to the ships and attached limpet mines.
Did it seem a risky undertaking?
In Alexandria, possibly not. It was a friendly harbour. The authorities would have known that we were there, and obviously any sentries, of course, would have been withdrawn, so they wouldn't have been any risk to us, really. The only risk would have been if one of the Greek seamen had seen us himself and realised what was going on. Then, of course, fireworks might have flown, but I don't think there was a great deal of risk on that one.
Did you have any contact with the Greeks?
Not until we got into the Aegean. Then we had contact with the Greek Sacred Heart Squadron.
But, I mean, the Greeks on the ship?
The Greeks on the ship, not at all. They didn't know we were there.
Can you tell me some details about the ships that you sank in the Aegean and how you did it?
In the Aegean, I wasn't on that raid, although I was in attendance. They were sunk very, very much the same way as our ones in Bordeaux. Two, three canoes went into the harbour, approached the ships and attached limpet mines, and then withdrew again.
But you weren't actually involved in it?
I wasn't actually involved. I was on the escort vessel, which was a motor gun boat. I suppose, you know, much I would have liked to have been, but they got very, very jealous. They said, well, you've done one, and it's amazing when you think of it. Men crying because they can't go and volunteer to be killed. That's how we was those days, I suppose.
Did they actually cry?
Oh, when they put us off the submarine, and this first canoe was hauled so badly that it couldn't come, the two lads actually stood on the casement crying their eyes out like little babies because they couldn't come on the operation.
And you said that you were on some raids in the Aegean. What did they involve?
They're all different types. Obviously, there was no more shipping for us. So then, if the Greeks were going to do a raid to wipe up an enemy garrison or something, I would go, possibly the only Marine would go with them. We would do raids there. I would possibly have a radio. As a matter of fact, in this museum, you had a photograph of myself with a radio on in the Aegean. I would go perhaps as with a radio and keep in touch with the gunboats. And obviously, we used to go in and attack just the same. But our last one on there was rather humorous, really. I think it was Milos. There was a garrison of Germans there. They'd been there for about 18 months. They were behind 6 foot of reinforced concrete, 600 Germans, 6 foot of reinforced concrete, and intelligence told us that their morale was so low that as soon as they saw us, they would pack up, they would surrender. Well, they landed 10 Marines, 10 Royal Marines, that was the entire force we had up there, and about 80 Greeks. And the object was we landed on this island, wiped up the first little post, took a few prisoners. Then we would go to the main garrison and just at dawn open fire with everything that went bang. And I think the biggest thing we had was the Vickers machine gun. Then hoist the white flag, go in and meet the Germans and tell them, you know, the war's nearly over and it's useless wasting blood and good lives, and suggested they surrendered. And always they said, no, we'll fight. And of course there we were, landed on a beach with 600 Germans and about 90 of us on our side, and somehow or other we had to try and get them out. I think this was the only raid that we failed in. We couldn't get them out, obviously. But all the other raids like this, their morale wasn't that low at all. They were very good soldiers. And we would have a little bit of a fight and eventually they would surrender. And we used to bring them off. And when they see who they surrendered to, they were disgusted with themselves.
Would many casualties be taken?
Not very, very few. Actually, I think the only casualty I know of was on one raid was an English captain got killed. The Germans had a few casualties. A Greek got very badly wounded, rather humorous really, although it shouldn't laugh at it, but he was doing what we used to call a marine crouch. He was crawling along round the top of a little hill and his backside was in the air. And there must have been a very good gunner on the German side, watched it. And of course he let loose with a magazine and it was a good shot. He hit this poor old Greek right in the backside. But yeah, I say they were the only casualties. One Greek lost a leg, but we only had one English casualty. There was an English captain, a very nice chap, who got killed. But apart from that, our casualties were very, very low, very, very good.
What were the Greeks like to work with?
Personally, I didn't like them. Very, very good soldier, very good, but undisciplined. And to my way of thinking, discipline was the key thing in any warfare or any action. They landed on one island with us, and we stormed an outpost with the Sacred Heart Squadron. I think there were about 4 Marines. And I know we'd rounded up these prisoners, and one of these Greeks, he kept booting the prisoners every time he got near them, you know. And well, after all, I thought, well, this is not right. And I stopped him. And then we picked up a medical man from the German side, a prisoner, and he had his little haversack with all his medical equipment in, which he wanted to take with him. I had a look in the haversack, and it was bona fide medical equipment. And then this Greek sergeant came in, big fella, and he snatched his haversack away from this German and then hit the German across the mouth. And the German, who spoke a bit of English, he said, I must have that haversack, he said, for anything. And I agreed with him. I said, yes. I said, this Greek sergeant, give it to him back. And he wouldn't. And we got to the point where we'd both pulled pistols on one another. And my God, I've never been so frightened in my life. I thought, well, who's going to pull the trigger first? But thankfully, he backed down. He gave him through the haversack at the German and just stalked out. But this was the Greek soldier I found. Very, very good in action. But discipline, no. And I didn't like working with them.
What did their attitude towards the Germans seem to be?
Hated them. Really hated them. If they got a chance, they didn't take prisoners. They really hated them.
Did you see them kill prisoners?
I saw one or two killed, yes. But you know, in times like this, obviously you can say nothing. And they really weren't encouraged to take prisoners. Not a good policy to take prisoners up there, really. You used to get ashore and do a little raid and you had to get away again. And nine times out of ten, of course, you couldn't take prisoners. At the same time, you couldn't leave them behind to let them know who had raided or how you'd come ashore or how you'd got off. So something had to be done about them.
Did the British kill prisoners?
I never ever saw British kill prisoners, no.
Why do you think the Greeks hated the Germans so much?
Possibly because of the way they were treated, perhaps when their country was occupied and so forth. But having said that, on some of the Greek islands, we found the Germans and the local populace were very, very friendly. Germans and the Greek people on some of the islands and little outskirts were very, very friendly. I know we had two Germans sent a Greek along to us. We'd established a base in Chios, and they sent a Greek along to us. They wanted to surrender. So myself and one of the SAS boys went along to capture them and so forth. And when we got there, they were very pleased to see us, funnily enough. And when we took them away, the Greek women were crying and a lot of backslapping and shaking hands and you know. It's very, very funny. A lot of them go on very well, but a lot of them didn't.
When you were going back to Operation Frankton, when you heard that your comrades had been executed, what was your attitude?
Well, disgust, obviously. We never heard this until after the war. As I say, the first two lads that capsized and were picked up within the hour, these lads were interrogated for 5 days, nearly a week. And according to the German communique from Hitler's HQ, they were to be interrogated with no methods barred. They must have been wonderful lads, where they couldn't have said a word, because we now had 5 days to go in, and if they'd have given one little clue what we were on, the Germans could have stopped us easily. But they were interrogated for 5 days, eventually taken into Bordeaux, and of the night that we did our explosions went up, these two lads were executed. The second two were drowned. The third two were taken to Paris and interrogated and shot. Now the fourth two that got in and did the raid with us, they were making good their escape for about a month. And we were always told that if you get in any real difficulties, the French gendarme will be a friend. And these two lads, we believe, went to a French gendarme, and of course he turned them over, and they were taken to Paris and shot. Now when they captured the German general responsible for these executions, a general von Tippelskirch, and because they'd caught two of the lads and execute them after the explosion, he thought there were no survivors, and he put up a fantastic story how we'd landed in civilians and were nothing but common saboteurs, and therefore we were entitled to be executed. I'd come out with the forces then, and they asked me would I go across as a witness to the Hamburg war crimes trial, which naturally I did, and I was produced, I suppose, as a surprise witness, since he expected no survivors. And his case was obviously blown up in the air. But I think all he got for that was life imprisonment.
Had you expected the Germans to react in such a way?
Yes, we did. We never expected that if we were captured, we would be taken prisoner. At that time, the infamous Hitler Commando Order was in operation, where British commandos were doing these sneak raids on the coast. And really and truly, the German sentry was getting so terrified at being on his own on the coast that Hitler gave this as well-known commando order that all commandos were to be shot down as they landed without right reason or rhyme or without any chance at all. All commandos were to be executed on the spot. And when they captured our first two lads, I know there was a lot of argument went on. The naval commander of Bordeaux didn't want to execute them. But it came down from Hitler's HQ that they were to be executed under the Hitler Commando Order.
Did you have some kind of wild party before you set out on Operation Frankton?
No, not really. When we first went up to Scotland to board the submarine, we weren't sure if it was going to be an operation until we got aboard the submarine. And then, of course, it was too late to have any world parties or anything then.
I think that on your flight from Bordeaux to Rufec that you had problems with having door slammed in your face.
Yes, we did. We used to knock on the French doors, and obviously Major Azar, the only one that spoke French, used to ask for help, had they any food to spare, and majority of cases the doors were slammed in our face. We had to get away quickly. And we couldn't understand this until we'd met Mary Lindell, and we explained this to her. We said, why, you know, we thought these people were friends on our side. And she said, well, this is very unusual, she said, because people in this area are usually pretty good. And she said to Major, as I said, speak to me in French. He did. And she said, my God, no wonder. Well, when the Major was at school, his teacher had been so intent on getting rid of his Oxford accent with his French that subconsciously he'd given him a German one. And the German people used to think that perhaps we were Germans going around masquerading as commandos, and any French people that helped us, of course, would be taken away and executed. And the Germans did used to do this.